This is the Empowered Caregiver. If you are a caregiver or know someone who is, this show is meant to uplift you through education and support while also lifting up every caregiver's invaluable role in society. Now, here are the Empowered Caregivers and your hosts, Kristen Voss and Liza Hellenbrand.
Hello, everyone. I'm Kristen.
And I'm Liza.
And together we are the Empowered Caregivers. Today we're here with Ellen Merker from Heart Consulting to talk about how to provide support and education to reduce sexual and domestic violence against people with disabilities. Ellen does this work with a very person-centered focus, which means that while she's protecting against violence, it is still important to recognize that neurodivergent people may actually want to be in intimate and sexual relationships. So as family caregivers, myself included, I'm very interested in this topic, and society as a whole, we need to recognize that everyone deserves to have healthy relationships. Heart Consulting believes in empowering people with disabilities to live full lives with meaningful relationships, and they work to do this by educating about safe and healthy relationships, as well as providing support and advocacy to individuals. Heart Consulting also believes in community engagement, education, and outreach to create change and reduce abuse of individuals with disabilities. Excuse me. So a lot of this was really good, big language and a beautiful vision from Ellen's website. But I'm really looking forward to this conversation because it's going to help us better understand what neurodivergency means and how to look at neurodivergent people as full, complete people, especially in terms of sexual intimacy, sexual orientation, and gender identification.
I cannot wait for this conversation either. I remember first meeting Ellen and thinking, wow, we've got to have her on the show. She is such a needed resource to so many people. And I remember how it was interesting for us to talk to Monica Lynn, the sex therapist, a few months back about how being a family caregiver impacts sexual and intimate relationships. So it's going to be really interesting to consider how it may relate to some of our care recipients. So let's jump right in. With that, Ellen, welcome. And could you just please take a moment to introduce yourself and your organization?
Yeah, my name is Ellen. I founded Heart Consulting back in 2017, like you said, with the mission of reducing sexual and domestic violence against people with developmental disabilities. I worked as a case manager for a number of years before this and had just seen at one point, I realized how many clients on my caseload had been sexually assaulted or abused or were in unhealthy relationships. And it was my job to really find resources for them. And when I did that research, there was just nothing out there. So I ended up starting Heart Consulting to address that gap in services. I'm also a trauma therapist. Again, I work exclusively with neurodivergent kids, teens, and adults. I've been around for 6 years doing this work now and really excited to be here and talk more about it.
Well, yes, thank you. There's definitely a need. And I had no idea to what degree the amount of violence and abuse and assault is in this community until we started attending a camp. And they wanted us to really understand why there was always going to be two on one in terms of staffing and campers. And so they told us some of the jaw-dropping statistics. And as a mother of a young woman with disabilities, it just is something that is very near and dear to my heart. Before we get into the specifics, though, I love that I use this word from your website and you used it too, neurodivergent or neurodivergency. And I just want to make sure that we're all understanding what that word means from your professional standpoint. And I'm sure many people in the audience can kind of be schooled on it as well.
Yeah. So neurodivergence, this term has been around for a long time, but I think it's really been picking up steam lately. What it's about is seeing diagnoses such as autism, ADHD, developmental disabilities, not as this deficit, but as differences in how we perceive. And we need that diversity, right? Like we need diversity in our ecosystems, we need diversity of thought. And so it really steers us away from this pathologizing medical model of disability that says we need to fix this or we need to cure this. And it looks more at a humanistic approach, right? Like the psychosocial, like there's so many things that are impacting people. And if we just simply, a lot of times something may not be really disabling until you encounter environments that create barriers. And so it's looking at, you know, how do we provide supports and accommodations to make sure that neurodivergent people are able to be successful rather than constantly trying to fix and change them.
Okay, so that's super helpful for me to understand. Why is that important to put that in that context of understanding why this population might be more at risk for sexual assault, or why we need to educate about safe and healthy relationships with this group?
Yeah, so there's a lot of assumptions out there about neurodivergent people when it comes to relationships and sex. I remember working with a kid back in college, and in one of his reports, a case manager had written that he was antisocial. And I had to say, no. He is not antisocial. He wants friends. He wants relationships. He wants to date. He's just going about it in a way that's different than his peers. But that doesn't make him antisocial. And the second you put that label on somebody and somebody reads that report, you know, maybe they're not going to focus funding or resources on getting him into groups and doing social things because they assume that's not what he wants. So we have this issue of people making assumptions that neurodivergent people aren't interested in dating, aren't interested in sex, or shouldn't be interested in dating and sex. And then we don't have conversations with them about safety. We don't provide them with opportunities to meet people safely. And that's what's really kind of putting a lot of people at risk, is not just like there's something inherent about neurodivergence that makes them at risk. It's how we really treat and educate people from starting from a young age.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Putting them at risk.
And why do you think it is that it isn't discussed and addressed more in programming for neurodivergent people?
So part of it is those assumptions. Part of it is, you know, sex is an uncomfortable topic for a lot of people. And when I do trainings, we talk about, like, one of the first things we say is, let's just put it out there. You may not be used to talking about sex so openly, right? And there could be a lot of reasons for that. Religion, culture, media, how were you raised? Were your parents really conservative? How open were they about this? You know, all these different things can impact our comfort level. Some people just don't feel educated enough or knowledgeable enough about it. And so that's kind of one area that I'm really working on, is making sure that caregivers feel more comfortable having these conversations.
Well, that's great. That goes right to my question about, from a more practical standpoint, then how are you actually implementing your mission?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so in addition to the trauma therapy, I don't want to wait until something happens to provide services and resources. I think we have a very reactive system that just waits until something bad happens and then we'll provide services. We need more of a proactive system. So we need comprehensive, sex positive education. We need to make sure caregivers have good education around this too. And so that is something that I'm doing, is providing more education. So when people know their rights, when people know, I can say no. How do I know when I'm feeling uncomfortable? How do I know when a relationship is healthy or unhealthy? They're more likely to be able to be empowered and confident in making decisions to keep themselves safe. Okay. So it really starts with education.
And so is that educating? Okay, so you said that you educate caregivers. How do you do that?
So, you know, I think a lot of caregivers' responses to, you know, quote unquote behavior is a very behavioral model. So, you know, punishments, consequences, that kind of thing. And we really want to shift that to more of an understanding of, why is this person acting in this way? What needs are not getting met? And how can supports sort of change the reaction to help people learn and understand how to have safe and healthy relationships? So, you know, you catch your adult son or daughter sexting or watching porn, and the immediate response is, take away the phone, take away the computer, rather than having a conversation and saying, hey, it's totally natural and normal to have these feelings and urges. Let's just figure out how to do this in a safe, healthy way.
Great, great. Okay, so that was super helpful, especially because that is an issue in my household with my 21-year-old daughter. And but what I guess I meant more was, I'm sorry, I didn't ask the question more directly or more clearly. How are parents getting to you to get this education?
Oh. Yeah, so I am currently going to be offering a training for parents through the Dane County CLTS program that's going to specifically be about trauma and how trauma impacts somebody's behaviors and their nervous system. In addition, I do some consulting work. So working with parents, I provide resources, I provide information on my website, newsletters to try to get some more information out there and more resources out there. I do groups for people with disabilities as well.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. Okay, so since this is a show for family caregivers, let me just make a connection directly for our audience and recap what I heard you just say, is that you run groups that people can, who are family caregivers, can attend to understand some of these topics in more detail and personalize it for their own situation. You also will provide consultation services to families to help understand in their particular child's relationship, adult child's relationship, or teenage child's relationship, what can be done to help address whatever the sexual or intimate issues might be, as well as creating some healthy expression for the youth. Is that right?
Yep. Yeah. And I'll also be doing some trainings for caregivers through the Community Outreach Wisconsin, which is through Wiseman Center. So that's something new that's going to be coming up as well.
Okay. Well, that sounds great. And then how do you provide service to the people with disabilities or the neurodivergent people?
So right now, I don't do the one-to-one work at this time, but I do, when I have the time and capacity, I do groups. So for example, I'm going to be doing one at Gigi's Playhouse for kids with Down syndrome in August. And then, you know, I can do groups with kids through CLTS. I don't have any of those scheduled right now. I have time to do one group at a time. So once I'm done with the parent caregiver group, I'll be doing one for self-advocates.
Well, that's excellent. And I think groups is obviously the model that I'm hearing you say.
And when you refer mm-hmm. to CLTS, you're referring to waiver funding or fund, state funding to pay for those programs. And you also accept Medicaid. Is that correct?
Medicaid is for the therapy specifically. Sure. Medicaid for education.
We've been talking with Ellen Merker from Hart Consulting, and when we come back, we're going to talk more about the six-week trauma caregiving support group that Kristen's going to be going to next month. So stay tuned and learn more about the impact of trauma and can have on neurodivergent people and what we can do as family caregivers.
Caregiver Show, and I'm Kristen Voss, and I'm here in studio with my co-host Liza Hellenbrand, and we're speaking with our guest Ellen Merker from Hart Consulting. I'm having a hard time putting Ellen Merker and Hart Consulting together. We've been talking.
You leave that those to me.
I know. Yeah, exactly. This time I've caught Liza's. Yeah. We've been talking about the need for better understanding how to support people with disabilities and having healthy relationships. And as I've mentioned a couple times, I'm a mother of a 21-year-old young woman with autism, epilepsy, and an intellectual disability. So this topic hit a nerve with me. I know that my daughter, Nicole, is yearning for a full life with different types of relationships, including a romantic one. And so I also know that she's incredibly vulnerable, though, and has experienced some trauma. So I wanted to learn more about how all of these issues are interconnected. And when I saw your group being advertised, I was like, sign me up. I've got to be part of it. Can you remind me what the name? I thought it was interesting what you chose to name the group.
Yeah, it's now I have to remember what order the words go in, but it's Brains, Trauma, and Big Emotions.
There we go. And it's okay. There isn't a quiz at the end of the show. So
okay.
Even if
you
got
trauma, the order brains, and big emotions. Yes. I think I messed up that order.
That's okay. But we got the idea that there's trauma, big emotions, and brain being discussed. What sparked your interest in developing this group for caregivers?
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of times I'll see clients coming to me for therapy and the expectation from caregivers, parents, professionals that, okay, we've done our part, right? They just have to go to therapy once a week and then we're good. When in fact, if you know, I could do a fantastic job in therapy and do everything right, and yet if they're going home to somewhere that is very triggering for them, or is, you know, not supportive in some way of their neurodivergence or not trauma informed, they're going to continue to have triggers and it's going to be harder and harder to heal. And so we really need both paid and unpaid caregivers to understand how trauma really is impacting people's nervous system. There's a lot of neuroscience behind this that it's really important to understand, because when we have a better understanding, we can approach it with more empathy rather than saying, well, they're just being difficult, you know, with these challenging behaviors, quote unquote. But if we approach it from that humanistic understanding of curiosity and just kind of wanting to support, then we see major changes in somebody's healing.
Okay. I think I'm still struggling with, why is somebody whose mission is to help neurodivergent people have these rich lives and sexual experiences and relationships, why are you also bringing in trauma?
Unfortunately, so sex and trauma should not go together, right? Anytime there is, I've never understood the word non-consensual sex, because that is sexual assault, and let's call it what it is. Unfortunately, we see this happening a lot. And so I want to kind of address this from two different perspectives, the proactive part of that education and trying to prevent it. But we also really need more resources that when somebody has experienced trauma, that them and their caregivers, their supports, are able to manage that, that people know how to report it, that people know how to, you know, work with somebody who is experiencing these really tough emotions after a trauma so that they're not getting re-traumatized.
Okay. That makes more sense to me. I appreciate that. And are we talking about trauma just from a sexual assault angle, or are we talking about it in the whole big picture? And is that why you're referencing?
No, big picture. I mean, this group is for, you know, caregivers whose, you know, son or daughter or whoever they are caring for has experienced any type of trauma.
Okay.
So whether that be sexual abuse or assault, you know, trauma can be from just being autistic or being neurodivergent and being bullied, like all through your childhood, being excluded all through your childhood. That's traumatic. That impacts the way that we're connecting with other people. So there's a lot of different ways that somebody can experience trauma. And it's important, you know, there's no hierarchy here. Trauma is trauma, and we need to be supporting somebody no matter what that traumatic experience is.
Well, I like that you say that. And we did a show a while back on trauma and some of the work of, now I cannot think of his name, Gabor Maté. I'm not sure if you're familiar with him. And he kind of went into big T and little T as far as trauma goes, because sometimes when you think of trauma, your brain goes to the most traumatic example that it can think of. And really, it doesn't have to be that. There are a lot of things that are out there that can be traumatizing to you and stick with you.
Right. I think I've already been educated on the fact that I was thinking, well, is this the right group for me? Because Nicole hasn't experienced sexual trauma to my knowledge, but you know, I know she's at risk for that. But now understanding that just Nicole's existence, having to navigate the world, has caused her to experience trauma because of her disabilities and the lack of acceptance, not just from the outer society, but also from her own family. Like in our own household, we've made all kinds of mistakes, and we've also done a lot of fighting about her and with one another in front of her about her in a way that was really disrespectful, but I wasn't understanding that in the moment. And so that right there is trauma, whether it's a big T, little T, or middle T. And so I really appreciate both of you helping me understand that trauma doesn't have to mean being raped or sexually assaulted, that it can be some of these.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be one singular event. It can be, you know, chronic stress, chronic, you know, poverty, you know, experiencing racism and discrimination. Those are all traumatic events, even if it's not one specific time.
Definitely makes sense.
Yeah. And what are some of the topics that you will be addressing in your course for caregivers?
Yeah, so we're going to be going over sort of self-compassion for caregivers. Caregivers don't get a lot of time to do this, but it's really, really important to take care of yourself as a caregiver. And we're going to talk about why that's so important. We're going to talk about understanding neurodivergence and how, you know, executive functioning skills may impact somebody's emotions. We're going to talk about understanding the neuroscience behind trauma. We're going to talk about connection and healing and what supports can do to really promote that healing. And we're going to talk about how to work with your therapist or the child's therapist, as well as their school, in being more trauma informed.
You're listening to Ellen Merker from Heart Consulting. We'll be back after this short break.
Listening to Kristen and Liza with the Empowered Caregiver Show, and we've been talking with Ellen about the services that Heart Consulting provides for people with disabilities and their family caregivers around both healthy relationships and protection from sexual harassment and violence. So it's been really interesting to listen to how Ellen has helped us see that we need to do this from both angles, right? When we're talking about a neurodivergent population, we need to be looking at the fact that this group has experienced trauma and can be more at risk for sexual assault or misunderstanding. And then also, this group hasn't had a lot of education, nor have their family caregivers, around why it's important for them to be able to have healthy sexual relationships and how to support that. So I've really enjoyed the show so far. And I want you to know, Ellen, that every show we like to ask some powerful questions, which are those that push you to go inward and reflect a little bit on your own personal experiences and thoughts. So my question for you, first off, is since you do provide consultation work for teams, families, and or caregivers, what's one of your favorite stories about a caregiver you have met in your work?
So I do some work with a managed care organization where specifically my referrals are for people who have really significant trauma. They are living in situations where there's high, like, restrictive measures, insane, like, behavioral support plans, really, really, like, strict sort of situations. Sure. And I get called in when, you know, it's a lot of sexualized behaviors and that kind of thing. And a lot of these times it's in very rural areas where the staff, the caregivers, have zero experience talking about sexuality, and seeing them sort of open up, being more open-minded to a different way of doing things. You know, sometimes I see them be real stubborn and dig their heels in, but I can think of one particular client where the team has really taken what I've said, done my trainings, and become more open-minded in how they can approach the behavioral concerns in a more trauma-informed way.
That's awesome. Good for you.
And my question for you, Ellen, is what continues to be the greatest challenge, and how do you navigate that?
Funding is always a little tricky. Sure. Which I'm sure pretty much anybody running any kind of a social service agency will agree with. So I've had to get a little creative lately, and reach out to some new sort of organizations like Community Outreach Wisconsin, and finding some new ways, because groups in particular are a little bit harder to fund, and I'm not a nonprofit, so it's hard to find grant funding. So I think the way I've been navigating that is to just kind of really collaborate with other organizations and connect with other organizations, because there's a lot of power in that.
Yes, and I think you've done some good work with that, because your name keeps coming up across my screen, literally and figuratively, for different things either related to the Empowered Caregiver or to Nicole, because some of the organizations that you're collaborating with are promoting you. And then as I was at a meeting with some of the Team Nicole providers, they said, oh yeah, Heart Consulting, you want to talk with them, definitely, because Nicole is potentially developing a boyfriend. I got a text from one of her service providers that it has been confirmed that Nicole has a crush on Ian and Ian has a crush on Nicole. I was like, okay, not quite sure. Yes, it is great, but I'm not quite sure what we do with that. And so they said, this is why you're talking to Ellen, both on the show and off the show. And this is why I'm taking your group next month. So I think your collaboration is proving to be very successful. So again, I kind of want to push you into thinking about some of this from a personal standpoint. How has all of this work and this impact, excuse me, this experience impacted your own journey in life? How are you being affected by all this?
Yeah, so, you know, I get asked a lot, what motivated you to start your agency? And I feel like people always are looking for something really inspirational, but the real answer is anger. Mm. I get really angry when I see something that I believe is unfair. And I could either, you know, take that anger and sit with it. But instead I try to look for, okay, so where is my power and where is my control here? Certainly there are some things I can't control. But this was one thing that I could do something about. I had experience in the area. You know, and so doing something is what has really, helped with some of that anger, sure. But it's also led me down a path of becoming a stronger advocate. You know, I've always been an advocate on the individual level. But this work has really led me to doing more, advocacy on a larger level, like with, the state and governments and funding. And I did, the Wisconsin Women's Network Policy Training Institute a few years ago, shortly after starting my business. And that just gave me so much confidence in my ability to really advocate on a bigger scale.
And what are three things that you would like to say to all caregivers?
So first, take care of yourself. If you are just like drained and exhausted and stressed, it's really hard to take care of others. And this is a huge part of, you know, being regulated is going to help so much with taking care of others. Two, connect, right? There is a lot of power in connecting with people who are going through something similar with you. That's why we have support groups. And there's a lot of healing and strength in that. And finally, just remembering that, you know, we are all human. We are all flawed, but you are doing a fantastic job.
I like that. That's a nice message at the end. And in terms of community outreach, because I know that's one of the other angles, and you've mentioned it briefly in terms of what was the group that you're connected with and you're going to be doing some work with in August?
Gigi's Playhouse.
Right. Okay. And we've had them on. They're awesome. But what was the community outreach piece? Because that's a group you're doing for self-advocates, right?
Yes. Gigi's. So actually that's for caregivers. So Community Outreach Wisconsin is kind of like a branch of the Wiseman Center outreach program. Mm-hmm. And they offer various trainings, mostly for caregivers right now, but we may be looking into doing some for self-advocates with disabilities down the road too.
Okay. So let me clarify though. So the one at Gigi's Playhouse is for caregivers or for self-advocates?
For both. So it's going to be kind of a joint. It's for kids ages 5 through 10, and their caregivers are going to be there with them.
Excellent. And then through the Wiseman Center, they've got this organization, Community Outreach Network?
Wisconsin.
And there you're going to be doing what exactly?
So those are going to be multiple trainings. It's not all set up yet, but it's going to be for caregivers to learn about having conversations about healthy sexuality, relationships, online safety, how to talk to kids, teens, and adults about these topics.
Well, and that was my next question for you. When you said 5 to 6, I kind of jaw dropped a little bit because I was thinking, oh yeah, kids.
Right.
Why not start at kid age? You know, I'm thinking sex, teenagers, puberty, so on and so forth. And 5 to 10. Wait, what? On that note, though, when would you recommend having these conversations with your kids or getting the information as a parent so you can have these conversations with your kids?
Yeah. So kids learn about relationships first at home, right? Like they see the relationships between adults in their homes. So anytime really is a good, I have a 2-year-old, and while I don't directly talk about consent, I ask, are you ready to get your diaper changed? He says no. He says no all the time. And obviously he needs to have his diaper changed, and you can't really reason with a 2-year-old. But I respect that. And I say, okay, how about we listen to one song or we read one book and then we go and change your diaper. Right. So I'm like modeling this from a very young age that you can say no, that, you know, I will listen to you and respect that. Again, you got to have your diaper changed. Nothing we can do about that, but modeling that kind of, that consent and that I asked, Yes. As well.
I like that about the whole idea of asking and just the idea that it is his body, right? And yeah. So because you're going into his personal space, that you are recognizing and modeling this idea that it isn't my job to just come in, swoop in and do it. It's really more respectful.
Well, and he would have an absolute fit, a temper tantrum, if I just forced him to change from one activity to another so quickly. Transitions are really hard.
I'm just thinking I got to pat myself on the back because there's been times where I've helped people with disabilities, like put on a seatbelt or whatnot. And I just naturally always ask.
I've seen you do that with
Nicole. Is it okay if I reach across your lap? Is it okay if I fasten this for you?
Right.
Yes. Exactly. That's great.
It is great.
And especially if you're doing personal cares for somebody with a disability, that is so important. Even if they're nonverbal, you know, putting your hands up, yes or no. And having them point to one of your hands to indicate yes or no, I'm ready or I'm not ready.
That's great. Yeah. Again, I don't think that I've been doing a very good job of that. So you guys have both schooled me. So thank you.
You don't know, and you don't know what you don't know, right? I mean,
right, exactly. I mean, I'm not going to lose sleep over this, but I appreciate just being. I mean, I think in ways I've been respectful with Nicole, but not in such direct, outright modeling of every time that she has the option to say no for a moment or that I will ask. I mean, I think it's just sort of assumed at this point, but no, I think it's a really important point.
And that can come up too with, you know, hugs and kisses and tickles, every kind of touch. If we just start modeling that from a young age, and there's also a lot of books out that, like kids' books out there these days about consent that can help parents start to teach kids about their bodies and that you have the right to say no to touch.
Well, and it's so interesting that that's where you started, right? I think what Liza meant I guess I shouldn't assume what you mean, Liza, though we've gotten pretty close to reading each other's minds, but this idea of talking with kids that are 5 and 6 years old about sex, I wasn't even thinking about it from the standpoint of, oh, we're actually talking about consent, right? That's what's more age appropriate when you're at a younger age.
Sure.
It's like, we're not going to start describing to you the actual sexual actions or how to get sexual pleasure, but more that this is your body and you have a right to say yes or no if somebody's coming into your bubble space and or touching it.
Right.
Yeah. Even if it's a necessary touch. Yeah.
Yeah.
So interesting. With this community outreach, what do you wish that more, that the government and employers, society at large, all of them, what do you wish the community would do more of or understand better to support your clients and their family caregivers?
Yeah, I really wish that the sort of measurement for quality of life was not so focused on, are they physically healthy and safe and are they employed? Right? Because like that, I used to do transition coordination, very important things, obviously. But I used to do like transition coordination and case management, and I've had experience, you know, with people getting denied services. When I try to help clients find good, safe ways to meet other people and decrease that loneliness, we always run into transportation issues. Nobody will cover transportation if it's to a social gathering, right? It's only for medical appointments and work. And so I really wish that we could take this focus again off of pathologizing everything and focusing on, you know, are they working at least 2 hours a week? Great, we're good. We've done our jobs. And really realizing that a quality of life is about more than work and being physically healthy. We need relationships. We need to decrease isolation. We need, you know, some people need to have sex. Mm-hmm. And we should be able to help them find opportunities to connect with others.
And, you know,
and that does increase safety too.
Yeah, exactly. And that just had me thinking, you know, that goes across the board. I mean, you can take out the neurodivergent part. There's been so many times where I'm thinking, looking at my younger 16-year-old son, like thinking, why aren't they teaching about relationships in school and how to have relationships and navigate really? You know, the kids are just stuck on their cell phone. They don't even know what to do when a human person comes in front of them anymore.
Right, exactly. No, I think it's an excellent point. And I also love that as you were talking, Ellen, I was realizing, all that I've been asked in the last 5 years about Nicole is about vocation. Nobody's been asking me or directing me or supporting me until recently, because your influence, about what do you want her to get married? Do you think she should mm-hmm. be able to have a romantic relationship? And one of the things that has been a real concern of all of ours is that she is quote unquote boy crazy, and everybody knows it. Everybody sees it, but nobody's really been helping me until recently recognize that we don't need to live in this perspective of fear, right? So scared that mm-hmm. because she's boy crazy, she's now going to be, you know, so susceptible. And we talk about how she's, you know, definitely going to get into a car with anybody who might say the right or wrong thing to her. Why aren't we instead taking this as a positive thing and saying, okay, mm-hmm. Nicole's yearning for that. She's looking for that. And so how do we do something to support it happening in a positive way? What a great conversation this has been tonight with you, Ellen. You have taught me so much.
Yes. Thank you so much for the great work that you do. It is so needed, and we are so glad and appreciative that you're out there doing the hard work.
Look forward to having
your group. Thanks for helping me get the word out.
Yes. And we look forward to being at your group next month.
All right.
Have a good night.
You too.
Caregiver Show with Kristen Voss and Liza Hellenbrand. And in this last segment, we want to talk about some of the current events that have been happening in the news that are related to family caregivers and the people that they take care of. This morning, I got some news about the Joint Finance Committee, and we've been talking a lot in our show about what the Joint Finance Committee has been doing with the budget and the budget proposals, and I was pretty disappointed with this one. They're still making decisions about issues that affect caregivers and their families, but the latest recap around school funding is bad news. The legislature, in my opinion, the legislature passed and the governor signed into law, even though I asked him not to yesterday.
I know, I wrote him too.
I know. He signed into law SB 330, which increases the amount of public dollars that private schools get for each student. That may not sound like a big deal because it's still money going to schools, but the problem is that private schools can refuse to admit students with disabilities, or they can admit them, but then there's no accountability for any outcomes in providing services for them or trying to meet goals for them. And worst of all, what I've heard and seen in the school district I've worked with is private schools can admit students that have IEPs or that have, it's not because they have IEPs. They admit them even though they have disabilities. And then they say, oh, we can't serve them. We can't meet their needs. And they send them back to their neighborhood public school, but they keep the funding that comes with that kid into the private school. Beth Swedeen was a guest on our show a few months back, and she said today, as the Survival Coalition co-chair, continuing to expand private schools that are allowed to selectively admit students and are not accountable for outcomes while failing to adequately cover the costs of public schools, which are required to educate all students, is not the right direction for Wisconsin. And part of why I think it's important to point this out, too, is there's a whole other secondary level to it. As she says, this because the legislature's current proposed state budget proposal only increases the state's share of special education funding from a current
31.5%.
Sorry, thank you. Okay, so let's do this again. This is why it's so complicated, and this is where I get frustrated, because sometimes things become so complicated, and I feel like it's almost deliberately to alienate the population, right? So what I understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, Liza, is that the state gets federal funding when a student has an IEP, and then they give a portion of that to the school district as the school district hires speech therapists or special education assistants. But when the state is giving the public school that reimbursement, they aren't giving the full cost. And currently, they've only been giving 31.5% of that cost, which means that the school district is having to pick up the rest, which doesn't make any sense to me. And now the problem, from what I understand, is that we're only going to get an increase of the matching funds or the covering of the special education costs at a 33.3%. And the Survival Coalition was asking for 60%. I don't understand why we can't ask for 100%. You know? And it just seems to me like this is kind of crazy, because now, as another person on the Survival Coalition said, Kit Kirchensteiner, Wisconsin is now funding two separate and unequal education systems. Wisconsin is choosing to increase funding for private schools that do not have to educate students with disabilities and where families have no recourse if their student is not receiving the specialized support they need. So I'm scared. I think this is going to be something that's going to perpetuate more income inequality. We're going to continue to have public schools being taxed with more demands and less funds, and we're going to have private schools that people can afford to pay out of pocket themselves, or they're now going to be taking very needed public dollars and moving to a private school.
It is infuriating, so much so I almost just have to be done with it, because I can go on forever about how this really harms students with disabilities.
Yeah, because it's putting a stigma on them. It's putting them in poor funded schools. And then we're just going to continue to see a perpetuation of poor performance.
Right. Well, on a positive note.
Okay.
On June 9th, President Biden announced a comprehensive set of executive actions to increase the economic security of military and veteran spouses, caregivers, and survivors. This includes items such as expansion of child care, steps to improve employment outcomes for spouses and caregivers, improving support for military spouses during times of transition, and developing resources to support veteran spouses entrepreneurs, which I think is totally awesome.
Yeah.
You can learn more about it at whitehouse.gov. And it was really a bill to help military families, but I love in every sentence, they didn't just say military families, and they said military and veteran spouses, caregivers, and survivors. So it has caregivers splattered all over it. So I love that they acknowledge them as part of the military family and the military experience, and that they need their own set of support.
Right. And that they even need that own separate identification. Right. I know I've been trying to educate people. I was out in vacation this last week. And so I was meeting new people and they were asking, oh, what type of work are you doing? And I was trying to explain what we're doing here at the Empowered Caregiver Community and the Empowered Caregiver Show. And I was explaining that family caregivers are not family members alone, or parents alone, right? Or sons and daughters alone. That it's when you're taking on the responsibility of providing support that people can't do, supporting things that people can't do for themselves. It's what puts you into this caregiver role. Mm-hmm. And that, yes, it's a very fulfilling role, but it's one that comes with a lot more expectations and less training as people are getting into this role for longer. And so it was really interesting to me that I had to do a lot of education still around how what this role is and what it means.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, I am thrilled to see some of the traction picking up. I feel like I want to give myself credit for it.
I think you should.
Joe Biden's been listening to us,
exactly.
Clearly. but it is because it's a national crisis and it impacts so many people, and it's something that we need to address, because all research and studies and reports indicate it's not sustainable.
Nope. And it's not going to go away. No. I remember when Governor Evers, even though we're a little angry at him tonight because he signed that bill, when he was on the show, he was really, I think, stressing the point that this is a big issue in Wisconsin. It's not going away.
Right.
And that we have to start talking about it. So.
And I look forward to some of those conversations that we are going to have, especially around being a caregiver and employed.
Yeah.
Is a big one. But right now, my focus, to be honest, is the fact that you and I are going to go up to Lake Cabin after this show for a little
Working vacation,
for
quote unquote.
Working vacation.
Exactly.
No, yes.
It's going to be nice. I can't wait to be out in nature and be able to kind of reflect on some of the stuff that we've been doing and what we are going to do. I think this conversation with Ellen was really interesting.
It was. And I can't wait to talk with her more about my son, who has a girlfriend that's going to be attending college with him. So they're going to be alone.
I was wondering if that was going to come up. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we know that caregiving can be overwhelming and exhausting. So that's why we want to end each show with a positive note.
You got this.
and together we are stronger. So stay connected to the Empowered Caregiver community. Good night.